Welcome to part two of Nationals opening weekend, opening week. We are post Bryce Harper's return to Washington. To be completely honest, I'm recording this as they go into the top of the ninth. I've got it on, but I couldn't watch it anymore. The night could not have gone much worse for the Nationals. I think that if you're a Nationals fan, or even somebody that is a neutral party, you would agree with that. The night started off with a little bit of promise. Scherzer striking out Harper, putting up a zero in the top of the first, and then second batter in the bottom of the first, Trey Turner gets hit on the hand, has to exit the game, does not look good, left the game and went for x-rays. Doesn't look good. I think Trey's going to be on the shelf for a while with a broken or dislocated finger. That's going to hurt the Nats offensively. Matt Adams later leaves the game with back spasms because he went head over heels into the new seating down the right field line. And then Bryce, after striking out in his first two at-bats, gets three consecutive hits, culminating in a massive home run to right center field, 450-some-odd feet. And Bryce showed off a little bit, heavy bat flip, got getting the Philly fans pumped up in right field. I think it's safe to say that Bryce is officially hated now in D.C., and I think it's going to be that way. So we're going to get into the night, how we got here. I got to be honest, I'm relieved that it's over. I will be relieved after probably 4 o'clock tomorrow when the Phillies leave town and the Nats can just get back to regular baseball. This has been a circus from the start. I guess I'm glad that it was early in the season. The Nats did not handle their first real test well, and they've been exposed a little bit in some of the areas where they're lacking. It'll be a question about how they respond. How they respond tomorrow, they got to face Aaron Nola, but also how they respond this weekend against the Mets. And then again, three games next week against the Phillies. There's their schedule right out of the gate. Four straight series against the National League East. So, before we begin, as always, we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is the DMVSportsNetwork.com. Give them a follow on Twitter at DMV_SN. They've got a lot of great written content on DC sports, and they also have a bevy of podcasts that they're a part of. We're happy to be affiliated with them, and they blast our stuff out. We blast theirs out. Follow us on Twitter. By the way, this is It's About Time, a DC sports podcast. I am Nate. I forgot to do that at the top. But follow us on Twitter. It's About Time, DC1. That is ITS, About Time, DC1. Give us a follow on Twitter. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And rate us. Let us know what you think. You can shoot us an email. You can direct message us on Twitter. We're always happy to hear from you guys. And as always, we are grateful that you guys listen. For those of you that are not aware, if you're just jumping on in this episode, I did a first half of Nats opening weekend last night, part one. And the reason I did that was because everything that happened this past weekend was going to be overshadowed once Bryce came back, once Bryce made his comeback to D.C. And it has been. I mean, most of that stuff's going to be memory hold. You're not going to remember a lot from the opening weekend. So if you're interested in what my thoughts were on the opening weekend against the Mets, where the Nats went 1-2, check out part one. This is going to be all about just this game, Bryce's return, what the lead up to it, the game, and then my final thoughts. So we started the day with Bryce's long-awaited farewell to DC, farewell to Nats fans. We got word late last week that there was a farewell in the works. When they say a farewell's in the works, you expect something that's going to be a bit showy, that's going to really grab attention. All Bryce did was an Instagram post. Had he done that the day he signed his contract, that would have been sufficient. Waiting up until the day he makes his return to DC and then pre-announcing that he's going to, or having somebody pre-announce it, there's a farewell in the works. It was underwhelming. It was too little too late. And really, if you read the farewell, and I'm not going to read it on this podcast, you guys can go check out his Instagram if you want to read it. It was robotic and I didn't really find any emotion behind it. He thanked three restaurants, including the Silver Diner. I think the one in Clarendon, and doesn't get to the Nats fans until the second half of the statement. I tweeted out from the podcast's Twitter account early in the day. I said it just really struck me that it really came off like he was doing it through clenched teeth or like he had a gun to his head. It was, I found it to be much like everything that he does disingenuous. I hate to say it, but that's the way I felt. So, fast forward to slightly delayed due to a rain delay. First pitch wasn't until 7:45. You fast forward to about 7:37, 7:38. Philly's starting lineup gets announced, and the Nationals, the organization, has a introductory video for Bryce Harper. And he is heavily booed. I mean, I was shocked. We're talking Jason Worth in Philadelphia. We're talking Daniel Murphy in New York. Heavily booed. And I was shocked by it. Bob and FP were shocked by it. And personally, I think Bryce Harper was shocked by it. He did say in his farewell statement, part of his farewell statement was, I'm sure I'll get some boos, but I hope I get some, you know, a warm welcome as well. He was practically begging for a warm welcome from DC fans. He did not get it. And he appeared to be shocked by it. I was honestly surprised. I think Bryce is officially hated in DC. I think this game, his actions in this game, I think they cemented it. The two things that stick out to me, and this is typical Bryce, and it's fine, but he hits a double in the sixth inning that, you know, the Phillies put up four runs in the sixth inning to go up 6-0. He runs out to right field and just goes nuts, starts pumping up the Philly fans and just goes nuts. And typical Bryce, you know, he's not going to be reserved. He's always going to be the center of attention. And then hits a monster home run, credit to him, off of Jeremy Hellickson, an absolute bomb, and has a pretty significant bat flip towards the Nationals dugout. It's safe to say I don't think he's going to get a warm welcome here whenever he comes back. I thought at first that maybe, you know, this date was circled on the calendar. People who had bought tickets to this game wanted to go there and boo him. I thought moving forward that maybe it would be a little bit dampened moving forward, that it wouldn't be as volatile. I don't think that's the case now. I think that Bryce, in the middle of the game, after getting his first hit against the Nationals, decided, I'm going to just embrace the fact that they don't like me and I'm going to be a villain. And he's fine with that. I think Nats fans will happily embrace him being a villain. And that's where we are now. It's not going to be one of those things where, like, oh, it's Bryce Harper. It's going to be, oh, my God, we got to boo him. One thing I will say, and this is, you know, it's a tough thing to look at something positive. I did read a lot of things on Twitter tonight that some local people were said it was cringeworthy how much they were booing Bryce. I don't agree with that. We always hear that DC fans are not passionate enough, they're not engaged enough, and tonight they showed they love the Nationals and they were engaged. And then you get, well, that was cringeworthy. We don't want to be a city like that. Give me a break. All right. They showed passion tonight. The Nationals fans showed passion. And for the first five or six innings, they drowned out the contingent of Phillies fans that came down from Philadelphia. I learned this today. Apparently, a group of Philly fans, about 500 of them, bought tickets in right field for this game before Harper even signed, in anticipation of him signing. So there was a heavy contingent of Philly fans, especially in the down the right field corner. The Nats fans showed up tonight. And to be completely honest, they left after the sixth inning, down 6-0. I don't blame them. The game started late. But also, the Nationals didn't give them anything to cheer for beyond Max Scherzer striking out Bryce Harper twice. My big thought on the game tonight, on what it means, is that the Nationals had an opportunity tonight. They had a real opportunity to capture this city, to make maybe passive fans or moderate fans, they had the opportunity to really grab them. If they showed up tonight and they fought their guts out and pulled out a win and overshadowed Harper's return, they were unable to do that. Outside of Max Scherzer, the team came out flat. Now, they were deflated in the first inning when Trey Turner got hit by the pitch, went down, left the game. He's been their most dynamic offensive player to start the season. But nobody really stepped up offensively. I mean, Rendon hit a two-run homer, but that was too little, too late. They really had a chance to capture the city more than they've got them already, and they fell flat on their face, much like a lot of DC teams do. When they have the opportunity to do something special, they fall flat on their face, except for the Capitals last year winning the Stanley Cup. So the Nats missed an opportunity tonight. I think they got exposed a little bit as to where their weaknesses are. I don't think the night could have gone much worse. I don't think, unless Harper went 5 for 5, I don't think the night could have gone much worse. He turns out he's going to go 3 for 5, 3 RBIs, a homer, 1 run scored. They did have the 2 Ks. So let's just go down to the nitty-gritty of the game. Bryce did strike out in his first 2 at-bats against Scherzer. It was great theater, those at-bats. I mean, those were like playoff at-bats. The crowd was into it. They were on their feet. That was special to watch, I'm not going to lie. It was exciting to watch. Max brought it. Did not have his A stuff tonight. Didn't have his A stuff. He was missing a little bit. But even when he doesn't have his A stuff, he's still effective. And he gutted out 5 innings of 2-run, only 1 earned baseball. Got to give Max credit. He came out, and aside from the home run they gave up to Michael Franco, he really showed up for his team, and his team just didn't back him up. His pitch count was high through 5 innings because of 2 misplays in the field, both actually by Brian Dozier, who's usually pretty sure-handed. The first was in the first inning, ball up the middle, got a chance for at least 1 out, if not a double play. Dozier misplays the ball, and instead of 1 out or 2 outs, you've got 1st and 2nd, nobody out. And then the second one was a slow roller that he was not able to corral quickly enough, and it extended an inning, ended up with a unearned run. And then the defensive miscue by Yan Gomes on the pass ball on Scherzer's slider with the bases loaded. And I believe it was Asdrubal Cabrera who ended up, or not Asdrubal Cabrera, excuse me, Odubel Herrera coming in and scoring on the pass. Well, actually, yes, on the pass ball. So Max did what he could, but the team continues to be plagued by defensive miscues and then a shaky bullpen. Max leaves 2-0 after 5 innings. As always, gives them a chance to win. Didn't go as long as he wanted to tonight. But then the bullpen comes in. Wander Suero comes in. Gets an out, but then gets a guy on base. Davey brings in Matt Grace. Actually, it was 1st and 2nd. Davey brings in Matt Grace. Grace gets 1 out, and then the wheels fall off. And Davey stuck with Matt Grace against Gene Segura, and it did not work out. Segura ended the night with 3 RBIs. It was a bases-clearing double for Gene Segura. And Davey stuck with Matt Grace, lefty against a righty, and it did not work out for him. It just seems like through 4 games in the season, most of the levers that he's pulling are not working. That was basically the ballgame. I mean, there's 2 outs right now with Brian Dozier at the plate. They're down 8-2. The final is going to be 8-2. Story of the game for the Nats, in my opinion, is not Bryce Harper. They're going to be glad that the pomp and circumstance of him coming back is over. The story of the game for them is Trey Turner. He's been their most dynamic offensive player through the first handful of games this season, and there's a potential that he could be out for a prolonged period of time. Depending on what happened to his finger, he couldn't move it or bend it when he left the game. If he's gone for a month or however long it takes, that's going to be really damaging to an offense that was already having trouble. Wilmer Defoe cannot fill that void. Now, Howie Kendrick will be back Thursday. There's a very good possibility, because they have a 1 o'clock game tomorrow, that they could play tomorrow's game shorthanded. The bench could be shorthanded because their AAA affiliate, for whatever reason, is in Fresno. And Adrian Sanchez is in Fresno. You're not going to be able to get him here by 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon Eastern Standard Time. So the story of the game for the Nats is Trey Turner. Matt Adams also getting hurt with back spasms. He went head over heels into they put it in last year, these new seats that were where the tarp used to be down the right field line. Adams was going for a pop-up, hit the barrier, and went head over heels. Left the game a couple innings later with back spasms. The Nats already shorthanded, and they really can't afford that with their offense. Pitching is going to have to step up. Anibal Sanchez is facing Aaron Nola tomorrow. They're going to have to step up. Otherwise, the Nats are going to be in real danger of falling four games back through five games. They're going to be 1-4, and the Phillies will be 5-0 if they lose tomorrow. Bottom line, Phillies are a good ball club, offensively especially. They are a tough ball club to navigate. It's the bottom line. 1-9, they're going to be tough to get out. Now, their pitching staff is not as sharp. You can make them work. And the way to beat the Phillies is to make their starters work, get into their bullpen in the 5th, 6th, 7th innings, and do your damage there. Because beyond Aaron Nola, their starting rotation is just average. They have a name like Jake Arrieta, but they're just average. They're going to win by outslugging teams, and they've done that through their first four games of the season. Scored 8 runs tonight against the Nationals. In a game that Max Scherzer started, only gave up 1 earned through 5, and then when the Phillies finally got to the Nats bullpen, it was all over. That's point one. Point two, the Nats bullpen's got some issues. Hellickson came in for some mop-up work. He gave up 2 runs. Grace, again, looked a little shaky. Suero didn't look sharp. Barraclough let 2 runners on, but ended up getting out of the inning without allowing a run. Nats bullpen is in trouble, at least early in the season, and it just appears that Davey continues to not pull the right lever at the right time and make the right decision. Are his players backing him up? No, they're not. The miscues in the field, there's nothing Davey can do about that. He can't do anything about Dozier misplaying 2 balls in the field into singles. They weren't errors. He misplayed them into singles. And then the pass ball by Yan Gomes. That's not on Davey, but those things, when they add up in a game where you can't make mistakes against an offensive team where you can't give them extra bases, you can't give them extra outs, that's the story of the game. So Davey's got to find a way to refocus his team. The team, I think, when Philly leaves town, they'll take a breath. But how this team comes back from being embarrassed at home. When you started the game, you had the crowd on your side, and by the end of the game, most Nats fans had left. It sounded like it was Citizens Bank Park. You had a chance, and you got embarrassed. How do you respond? You got Anibal Sanchez on the bump tomorrow. You got back-to-back 1 o'clock games. 1 o'clock getaway day tomorrow against the Phils, and then a 1 o'clock opening day in New York against the Mets, their opening day, home opener. How do you respond? It's going to be interesting to watch. But I don't think this is a division that you can look up after the first 2 weeks of the season and be eight or 9 games back and be like, well, we can claw our way back. It's not that kind of division. It's not time to panic. I mean, four games into the season, but Phillies are good. The Braves are going to be good. The Mets are going to be good. Nats have spent $200+ million on their payroll. They got to figure this out quickly. They can't start this slowly. They can't have a slow first 2 weeks while they figure it out. They just can't. So, a couple of final thoughts for me, kind of about watching the game, and I think I have to make a decision to just not go on social media during the game. I know I am too emotionally invested in the game. I know I am, especially because there's 162 of them, and tonight especially, you know, it was just. My stomach hurt the whole game. Well, until they went up 6-0, and at that point I could relax because I knew the game was over. But I'm just probably a little bit too invested. But also, when you go on Twitter, for instance, you just see the worst of humanity. You really do. And it's something where I kind of miss the old days. And I could still have the old days. I just put my phone away. I miss the old days where you didn't know what other people were thinking, and really, you didn't give a crap. You didn't give a shit what people in Philadelphia were thinking about the game. You just watched the game. You can't do that now. You know, you got people that relish that stuff. You get to see people get to express everything that they're feeling on social media, and it's just, it's toxic when you're watching a ball game, and it's supposed to be an escape from reality. Anyway, so I think I need to make a resolution that I'm going to stay off of Twitter during baseball games, because it really it lessens the experience for me. I think that, you know, one thing I was going to talk about, it's kind of lost a little bit of meaning. A-Rod taking a crap on DC or DC fans, DC sports, during Sunday Night Baseball, saying that, I'm paraphrasing, saying that DC sports fans care more about what's going on in the White House than what's going on in the field. I don't understand why A-Rod did that. I think he was trying to be funny and witty, and also at the same time he was trying to get some street cred in Philadelphia. Like, hey guys, look, I'm defending you. I don't know. It's been a topic of mine multiple times on this podcast, is how we're easy targets as DC fans. We just are. And it's because our teams never back us up. Again, except for the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup last year. But prior to them winning the Stanley Cup, they didn't back up their fans. Their fans would come out for them. Nats fans would come out during October, the four playoff runs that they had. Skins fans would come out big games, you know, Monday Night Football, the big games, and the teams would never respond, and we would just be easy targets for everybody else, especially for our rival cities, Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York, Dallas. It had just been, I'm sick of being an easy target, but I think I just need to ignore it all. But A-Rod shitting on DC for no reason, I mean, I've never liked A-Rod to begin with, so let's just say my opinion of him is not going to change. I've never liked him to begin with. And I really like the fact that, got to give FP some credit. He's been on social media and he's been making fun of it. But he's been making fun of it in a way that I think it's not just in good fun. I think he's trying to show how stupid of a statement it was, because it was a really stupid statement. A really stupid statement. And I'm just sick of people taking pot shots at DC for no reason. I know it's easy because of everything that's going on in politics right now, and they lump us in with that crap. And I'm sick of that, all right? Because the people, those of us that have lived in the DC metro area most of our lives or all of our lives, I was born and raised here, politics is secondary, man. Like, it's there, obviously, but it's secondary. I grew up, there was nothing more important than Washington Redskin football. Nothing more important. And yeah, the Redskins have let us down. They've let us down for 25 years. And the Wizards have been awful. The Wizards finally took a step today, by the way, firing Ernie Grunfeld. I'm going to cover that heavily next week because I think it's a huge turning point for the franchise. I really do. After 16 seasons, they finally fire him. It was a long time coming. But the Wizards have let us down, and the Capitals until 2018, they let us down. And the Nationals, yeah, four great regular seasons, winning four division titles, and in each, I mean, losing three heartbreaking game fives. They've let us down. And they let us down tonight in another opportunity. Dan Steinberg had this great thing. It was like, you know, the Redskins, their primetime record is garbage, and in division clinching, or I should say playoff series clinching games, the record for DC sports is just atrocious prior to the Cap Stanley Cup run last year. So yeah, we're easy targets. I'm sick of being an easy target. And A-Rod, you know what, man? Screw off. I'm trying to remember who, somebody did like an op-ed in the New York Post, or was an interview in the New York Post. I'm trying to remember who the player was. But he was talking about A-Rod. And he said this guy was the face of cheating. He was the, you know, steroids, performance-enhancing drugs. And now you've got him, he's doing Sunday Night Baseball. He's an analyst during the playoffs. He's like the face of baseball now. And it's like, it just, what kind of message is that showing? You cheated the game, and yet you still get to, like, people deserve second chances. But this guy, I've never liked A-Rod. I'm going to stop. Last thing I want to talk about, and then I'm gonna end it, because I got to be honest, I'm mentally exhausted. Tonight's game was just, after the first strikeout of Bryce Harper, it kind of all went downhill. Maybe after the second strikeout. I mean, Scherzer did give up the home run to Michael Franco. But anyway, Ronald Acuna signed an 8-year, $100 million deal, buying out his last 6 years of prior to arbitration, and or arbitration, whatever, and then his first 2 years of free agency. He's 22, so the 8-year deal will take him till he's 30 if the team exercises team options. Or he might be 21, actually. I take that back. He's 21, so the 8-year deal will take him to 29. There are two team options at the end of the deal. If the team exercises both of those, he can still hit free agency at 31. It's raining extensions in Major League Baseball. All I'm going to say about that for now, and I'll touch on it more next week, the Nats, I don't know if they will do it. The Lerners are big fans of, you know, they like the deferred money because they believe in the present value of money, and that, you know, if they can pay somebody $10 million later, you know, $10 million 2 years from now as opposed to $10 million now, that $10 million is going to be worth more 2 years from now to them because of what they can do with that $10 million in the next 2 years. I don't know if they'll do this, but I think they should approach Juan Soto and see if you can give him a deal similar to this one. Because it's a team-friendly deal if they perform the way you think they're going to. And it gives a guy like Juan Soto, who's 20 years old, financial security. It's kind of a mutually beneficial deal. I think you should approach Trey Turner, buy out his last 4 years of arbitration and maybe his first 3 years of free agency, do the same thing with him. And obviously, I want them to extend Anthony Rendon. If they do those three things this year, I'll feel good about it. But it's happening all over the league. Extensions are raining down. I think after what's happened in free agency the last several years, players are not as fond of free agency now, and they kind of like where they are. So they want to, you know, Xander Bogaerts signed an extension with Boston. I was talking to my cousins today. They were talking about, you know, they'd like to see other teams do it. The Yankees with Aaron Judge, maybe Didi Gregorius. So I think the Nats might explore it. I don't know if the Lerners are going to be big fans of it, but something that I look forward to, and we'll talk more about it next week. Anyway, that's all I've got. It's kind of like my stream of consciousness after the Nats played and Bryce Harper made his return to DC. I'm glad that it's over. I'll be glad when Philly leaves town, because the next time they come in, it'll just be another series. You won't have Bob Costas calling the game for MLB Network. But that's all I've got. Again, we're affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be reached on Twitter at DMV_SN. Great local DC sports website. Check them out. Check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1. Give us a follow. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. Rate us. Let us know what you think. We're always happy to hear from you guys. Until next week, where hopefully the Nats will have a little bit more positive things to talk about, as opposed to the last two podcasts have been a little bit more negative than I would have liked to start the season. Until next week, hope you all have a good week, and we'll talk soon. Take care.